Queridos hermanos y hermanas, dear friends, our gospel this morning is very familiar, especially for us as Catholics, and especially in the form that we hear it, not this way, Mark, but from Matthew. Because Matthew's gospel has a response, as you may or may not recall, a response in which Peter, having said, "You are the Christ, Son of the living God," Jesus says in turn to Peter, "And you are Peter, the rock on whom I will build my church." And so Catholics have found this to be particularly central in our experience. And if one goes to St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, in huge letters, in mosaic around the dome, it has that text, "You are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church." But this is Mark, and it doesn't have that extension. It just is more simple. Two famous questions, double question. Jesus asking, as you heard, as we heard a moment ago, "Who do people say I am?" Well, as many answers as there might be people in any crowd. Some saying, "Well, you're a provocative teacher who makes us think." Or someone else might say, "You're a healer and you make us better." Or, "You're a prophet of such significance that maybe you're even one who came back from the dead." Or, "You're a revolutionary." Or, "You're a mind reader." Or, "A social activist," or "A carpenter who really made it good." I mean, all kinds of answers might come back to that. Who do people say I am? But then, as we heard a moment ago, it becomes more personal, because the second formula for that same question, "But who do you say I am?" And it's more demanding, because whatever we say asks something from us beyond the answer. So whatever we say, it demands something from us. Peter jumps in, as Peter always does, impulsively but from the heart, to say, "You are the Christ, the anointed one, chosen by God, prepared, commissioned, empowered by God to enter into this world and make a difference." Peter says, "You're the Christ." And everyone of that time hoped for some kind of inspired revolutionary who would clean up the mess left by Herod, who would not be corrupt or not be avaricious or self-serving, someone who would be a leader who would really care for everyone, including the poor, and who would bring prosperity and peace to the whole world. That's what they were hoping for. Happy days are here again. I confess, it's a little bit like so many of these initial campaign speeches that we're hearing these days, even a year before the elections. They talk about a leader who will give us everything we want and it won't cost us anything. Now, there's the punchline in that gospel where I want to linger for a moment. Because Jesus says to Peter, who simply wanted a Messiah, Jesus says to Peter, who complains that Jesus talks about a cross, he says, "Peter, you're not thinking the way God does. You're not thinking the way God does." So how does God think about our wants and about our needs? How does God think about our deepest needs? God wants us to be reshaped into the image of Christ. God wants us to be profoundly ourselves. I say again and again from this wonderful spot of truth and grace. I say again and again, we're absolutely unique. I say it at confirmation celebrations. There's been no one like us in the history of the world. So if we exist in our uniqueness, God wants us to be ourselves. But God wants us to be our best selves. Maybe that's someone who will speak and hear the truth even if it hurts. Maybe that's someone who will be generous, even if it costs something. Maybe that's someone who will be humble. At any rate, God wants us to be our very best. What we want God to be, whatever we may want God to be, God has a better idea. And it's going to cost us something. That's the point of the gospel. God has a better idea than anything we could come up with on our own. And you know what? It's going to cost us something. So if we are each unique, each of us needs a slightly different adjustment of some kind or other. And the signal of the area which we need adjusted in our personality, in our lives, in our attitude, and our thinking is somehow overlapping with what we call the cross. Or to say it differently, what is my cross? What is your cross? Well, it's the one thing I would change if I could, but I can't. So if I can't change it, it's there for a purpose. And somehow it is that area that God wants to work. It's a little bit like physical pain, I think. Nobody likes physical pain, but it's a good thing because it indicates something isn't working the way it should be in our physical body. If there's pain, something isn't working right. And it draws our attention to that precise part of us, our physicality, that needs adjustment or treatment or care in some way. So if you and I want to think like God does, we ought to pay attention to our cross, whatever it may be. And if the cross, the one thing we would change, has to do with material possessions, well, we need to pay attention to that. Or if the cross, the one thing we would change, has to do with our relationships, family, friends, co-workers, neighbors, people we don't get along with in one way or another, we need to pay attention to that. Because somehow God is at work right there. Or if it's to our goals, things, dreams we have, we want, that aren't turning out the way we think they should, we need to pay attention to that. Because somehow that's where God is at work. At the end of the day, by paying attention to our respective cross, we will become more like God. And then we will think the way God thinks. And that's what the gospel is really all about.